This is Audible.
Oh My Audiobooks presents The Unrequited, written by Saffron A. Kent, performed by Anna Reardon and Joe Arden. Part 1, The Starlet. Chapter 1. My heart is not an organ. It's more than that. My heart is an animal, a chameleon to be specific. It changes skin and color, not to blend in, but to be difficult, unreasonable. My heart has many faces. Restless heart, desperate heart, selfish heart, lonely heart. Today, my heart is anxious. Or at least it's going to be anxious for the next 57 minutes. After that, who knows? I'm sitting in the pristine office of the school's guidance counselor, Cara Montgomery, and my heart is going haywire. It's fluttering, dipping up and down in my chest, bumping against my ribcage. It doesn't want to be here, because it takes offense at seeing the guidance counselor, which is really just a euphemism for therapist. We don't need a therapist. We're fine. Isn't that what crazy people say? Layla, says the guidance counselor with a psychology degree slash therapist, Ms. Montgomery. How was your vacation? I glance away from the window I've been staring out of, forgoing the scenery of the snowy outdoors to focus on the smiling woman behind the desk. It was all right. Well, what did you do? She is rolling a pen between her fingers, and then it slips out of her hand and falls to the floor. She chuckles at herself and bends to pick it up. Cara is not a typical guidance counselor slash therapist. For one, she's clumsy and always appears frantic. There's nothing calm about her. Her hair is never in place, strands are flying everywhere, and she's forever running her fingers through them to make them behave. Her blouses are always wrinkled, which she hides under her corduroy jackets. She talks fast, and sometimes things she says aren't very therapist-like. So, she prompts, giving me her full attention. I want to tell her that her glasses are tipped to one side, but I don't. She is less intimidating this way. My heart doesn't need any more threats than what her degree represents. I took walks mostly. I shift in the cushioned chair, tucking a strand of my loose hair behind my ear. Watched Netflix, went to the gym. Lies, all lies. I binged on Christmas candy my mom sent, or rather, her assistant sent, because my mom didn't want me to come home for the holidays. I sat on the couch all day and watched porn while sucking on Twizzlers and listening to Lana Del Rey in the background. I'm addicted to that woman. Seriously, she is a goddess. Every word out of her mouth is gold. I'm not addicted to porn or Twizzlers, however. Those are just for when I get lonely, which is most of the time, but that's beside the point. That's great. I'm glad. She nods. You didn't feel lonely without your friends then. It was all good? Now, this is what I don't get. Why is she smiling at me? Why are her eyes curious? Is she trying to dig deep? Is she trying to fish for answers? Her questions could be a cover for other loaded questions like, were you good, Layla? Were you really good? Did you do something crazy, like calling him in the middle of the night? Because you've done this before when you were lonely. So did you call him, Layla? Did you? The answer to all of this is a big, fat no. I did not call him. I haven't called him in months. Months. All I've done is stare at his photo on my phone. The photo no one knows about. Because if my mom knew I was still pining after him, she'd send me to a real therapist. A real live one who would ask all sorts of questions rather than disguising them with euphemisms. So no, I did not call him. I've only stared at a stupid picture like a pathetic, lovesick person. There. Happy now? I shift in my chair and open my mouth to tell her exactly that when I realize she hasn't even asked the question. I'm only thinking she has. It's all in my head. I tell my anxious heart to calm down. Relax, would you? We're still on the clear. I exhale a long breath and answer. Yeah, it was good. I kept myself busy. That's great. That's good to hear. I don't like when students have to stay back for holidays. I just worry about them. She laughs and her glasses become even more crooked. This time she straightens them up and folds her hands on the desk. So have you given any thought to what electives you'll be taking this semester? Sure. Of course not. I'm not made for education. The only reason I agreed to college was because I was given the choice between school in Connecticut and the Youth Rehabilitation Center in New Jersey. And I'm not setting foot in New fucking Jersey or going to a rehab center. Well, Kara raises her blonde eyebrow in question. I lick my lips, trying to think of something. I think I'm going to stick with the regular courses. College is hard as it is. I don't want to pile on new things. Kara smiles, she's always smiling, and leans forward. Look, Layla, I like you. In fact, I think you're great. You have great potential, and to be honest, I don't think you need these thinly disguised therapy sessions with me. I sit up in my seat. Really? I don't have to come here anymore? No, you still have to come. I'd like to keep my job. I won't tell anyone. It could be our secret, I insist. I don't like to keep secrets, but this one I'll take to the grave. It's tempting, but no. Cookie? She chuckles, offering the chocolate chip cookies sitting on her desk, going all friendly on me again. She gives me whiplash, and sometimes I want to ask her, are you here to analyze me or not? Not that there's anything to analyze. I'm a simple girl, really. I hate winters, Connecticut, and college. I love the color purple, Lana Del Rey, and him. That's all. I reach out to take one cookie, but then change my mind and take three instead. I never say no to sugar. Kara watches me carefully, and I'm about to snap at her when she speaks up. So, as I was saying, I think you have great potential, but you need to set goals and you need to work on impulse control. She gives me a pointed look as I take a bite out of my cookie. You don't have any, or at least what you have is very little. Huh. I sag back in the chair. Well, I knew that already. Kara threads her fingers together on the desk. Great. So we've already conquered the first step, acceptance. Now we need to work on the next step. And that is? How to control it. I hold up my finger. Way ahead of you there. I've totally got it under control. Kara raises a skeptical brow and I continue. I've been going to all my classes even though I want to walk around aimlessly all day. And I've got C's across the board even though I hate college. Not to mention, I'd kill for a drag or a drop of Grey Goose, but I haven't touched any of those things. I don't even go to parties. Because we all know parties are just breeding grounds for pot, alcohol, and sex. I shoot her an arrogant smirk, then finish my cookie. She can't get me after that. I've been good. I've busted my ass to be good. That's commendable. I appreciate your restraint, but that's also the bare minimum. You shouldn't be drinking and partying it up anyway. She pushes her glasses up. College is your time to learn, to discover yourself, to see what kinds of things you like, and for that, we have electives. So, I ask you again, any thoughts? Sighing, I look away. I'm back to staring out the window. The grounds are white and the trees are naked. It's all desolate and sad, like we're living in a post-apocalyptic world where things like electives are mandatory. What are my choices? I ask. Kara beams at me, swatting at a wayward curl that's getting in her eyes. Well, we've got a great writing program. Maybe you should try some of the writing classes. You mean like writing? At her nod, I shake my head. I don't even like reading. You should probably pick up a book sometime. Who knows? You might end up liking it. Yeah, no, I don't think so. I sigh. Do you have anything else? I don't think I'm cut out for writing. In fact, I think you'd be great at it. Really? I scoff. What do you think I should write about? This time her smile is both sweet and sad. Write about New York. I know you miss it. Or maybe something about winter. I hate winter. I wrap my arms around my body and hitch my shoulders to huddle in my purple fur coat. Another thing I like? Fur. It's soft and cuddly, and it's the only thing that can somewhat keep me warm. Then why do you keep staring at the snow? I shrug, and she dips her head in acceptance of my non-answer. How about you try writing something about what you felt when Caleb left and about the way you acted up? Caleb. I'm jolted at the mention of his name. It's not an outward jolt, more a tremor on the inside, like when you hear a sudden loud sound in a quiet apartment and you know it's nothing, but your body tenses nonetheless. I don't think I've heard his name spoken out loud since I moved here 6 months ago. It sounds so exotic in Kara's voice. On my tongue, his name sounds loud, shrill, wrong somehow. I shouldn't be saying it, but hey, I've got no impulse control, so I say it anyway. I hate her for bringing him up. I hate that she's going there in a roundabout way. I didn't act up. I just got drunk every now and then. I clear my throat, pushing my anger away, when all I want to do is storm out of here. I know, and then every now and then you went shoplifting, crashed your mom's parties, and got behind the wheel. Should therapists be judgy like this? I don't think so. And why are we talking about these things all of a sudden? Mostly we stick to neutral topics like school and my teachers, and when things get a little personal, I evade and make jokes. This one time when she tried talking about the days leading up to Caleb's departure, I took my top halfway off and showed her my newly acquired belly button ring, and maybe even the underside of my braless boobs. I didn't kill anyone, did I? I say, referring to her earlier comment about drinking and driving. Besides, they took away my license, so the people of Connecticut are safe from the terror that is me. Why are we talking about this? Because I think you can channel all of your emotions into something good, something constructive. Maybe you'll end up liking it. Maybe you'll end up liking college. She lowers her voice then. Layla, I know you hate college. You hate seeing me every week. You hate being here, but I think you should give it a chance. Do something new. Make new friends. I want to say I do have friends. I do. They're just not visible to the naked eye. But I don't. Because what's the point of lying when she knows everything anyway? Fine. Kara looks at the clock on the wall to her right. Tell me you'll think about it. Really think about it. The semester starts in a couple of days, so you've got a week to think about the courses, okay? I spring up from my seat and gather my winter gear. Okay. Good. It takes me a couple of minutes to get ready to go out in the snow. I snap my white gloves on and pull down the white beanie to cover my ears. Winter is a cruel bitch. You gotta pile on or you'll get burned by the stinging wind, and no matter how much I pile on, I'm never warm enough. Not even inside the heated buildings. So, I've got it all. Hat, scarves, gloves, thermal tights, leg warmers, fur boots. I'm at the door turning the knob, but something stops me. Do you think he's doing okay up there? I mean, do you think he misses me? I don't know why I ask this question. It simply comes out. Yes, I do think he misses you. You guys grew up together, right? I'm sure he misses his best friend. Then why doesn't he call? Boston is cold, I blurt out stupidly, my throat feeling scraped. A chill runs through my body at the thought of all that snow up there. But I'm sure he's fine, she reassures me with a smile. Yeah, I whisper. I'm sure Harvard is taking good care of their genius. You know, Layla, falling in love isn't bad or wrong or even hard. It's actually really simple, even when there's no reciprocation. It's the falling out that's hard. But no matter how much you convince yourself otherwise, reciprocation is important. It's what keeps the love going. Without it, love just dies out, and then it's up to you. Do you bury it, or do you carry the dead body around? It's a hard decision to make, but you have to do it. I know what she's saying. Move on. Forget him. Don't think about him. But how can you forget a love of 13 years? How can you forget the endless nights of wanting, needing, dreaming? I love you. That's all I ever wanted to hear. How can I let go of that? With a jerky nod, I walk out of her room. Outside the building, the air is cold and dry. It hurts to breathe. My heart is still fluttering with residual anxiety when I take my phone out, and stare at the last picture I have of him. He's smiling in it. His green, green eyes are shining and his plump, kissable lips are stretched wide. It's fucking beautiful. And I don't think I can ever delete it. Not in this lifetime. I put the phone away when I see a couple. They are up ahead of me on the cobblestone pathway, and they are wrapped around each other. The girl is cold, her cheeks red, and the guy is rubbing his hands over hers, trying to warm her up. They are smiling goofy smiles, reminding me of a smile from long ago. Caleb is the ring bearer and me is the flower girl. Caleb stopping in his confident but boyish stride to take my small hand in his. Me looking up at him with a frown. Ugh, how I hated him in that moment. Caleb flashing his adorable smile and me returning it. Despite the frown, despite the strange surroundings, despite the fact that my mom was marrying his dad, I hated getting a new brother. I hated moving across town to a new house with no rooftop garden. At the fork, the couple takes a right turn, and I'm supposed to go left. But I don't want to go left. I want to go where they're going. I want to bask in their happiness for a while. I want to see reciprocation. What does requited love look like? I want to see it. I take the right turn and follow the couple. It's cold. So fucking cold. Also dark. Super dark. And the Victorian lamps flanking the street don't do shit to light up my path. But none of that deters me from taking a harried pace. I'm walking down Albert Street, heading toward Brighton Avenue where the University Park entrance is. Sleep is hard to come by, especially when Kara mentioned writing about my unrequited love. Once upon a time, 6-year-old Caleb Whitmore smiled at 5-year-old Layla Robinson. She didn't know it then, but that was the day she fell in love with him. Over the years, she tried to get his attention without success. Then one night, in her desperate, desperate attempt to stop Caleb from going off to Harvard, she kind of, sort of, raped him a little bit. She's not entirely sure. Caleb went off to college 1 month earlier than he was supposed to, and Layla was stuck acting up. The end. 2 years later, I'm here, walking the streets, feeling ashamed of my love. Ashamed of having ever fallen for my stepbrother, and then driving him away. For the record, Caleb Whitmore isn't even my step-sibling anymore. My mom divorced his dad a few years ago. But I think some stigmas never go away, like you don't sleep with your best friend's ex-boyfriend and you don't date your friend's brother. Caleb will always be my stepbrother because we kind of grew up together. I don't even have memories of the time before him. I can't remember the house I lived in before I lived with him, except that it had a rooftop garden. I can't remember the friends I had before he came along. I can't even remember my own dad before his dad came into the picture. All I remember is one day when I was 5. Mom said we were leaving, and that I was going to get a brother. Then the dark days followed where I cried because I hated the idea of a sibling. And then a burst of sunlight. A tiny 6-year-old boy holding the rings on a velvet cushion, standing next to me. I remember thinking I was taller than him in my frilly, itchy dress, flowers in my hand. I remember thinking that I liked his blonde hair and green eyes, as opposed to my black hair and weird violet eyes. Together, we watched our parents get married. And together, we grimaced when they kissed each other on the lips. It was beautiful. With white lilies and the smell of cake everywhere. Now, I make my way toward the solitude. Slipping and stumbling on the transparent patches of ice, I enter the park. The cold wind curls around my body, making me shiver. But I keep going, my booted feet trudging through the snow. I'm looking for a particular spot that I like to frequent during the nights when I can't sleep, which happens often. Unrequited love and insomnia are longtime friends of mine. They might even be siblings, evil and uncaring with sticky fingers. Frustrated, I stomp and slip, falling against the scratchy bark of a tree. Even through the thick layer of my fur coat, I feel the sting. Motherfucking, I mutter, rubbing the burn on my arm. My eyes water with the pain, both physical and emotional. I hate this. I hate crying. I wipe my tears with frozen fingers and try to control my choppy breaths. It's fine. It's totally fine. I whisper to myself, I'm gonna be fine. My words stumble over each other, but at least I'm not crying now. Then I hear a sound. Footsteps on the iced ground. A wooden creak. Fear has me hiding against the tree, but curiosity has me peeking out. A tall man dressed in all black, black hoodie and black sweatpants, is sitting on the bench, my bench, under my tree with the network of empty branches. That's my spot, asshole, I want to say, but I'm mute, terrified. Who is he? What's he doing here at this time of night? People sleep at night. I'm an exception, though. I'm heartbroken. He sits on the edge, head bent and covered by the hood, staring at the ground. Slowly, he slides back, sprawls and tilts his face up. His hood falls away, revealing a mass of black hair illuminated by the yellow light of the lamp. It's long and wavy, almost sailing past the nape of his neck and touching his shoulders. He watches the sky, and I do the same. We watch the moon, the fat clouds. I smell snow in the air. I decide the sky isn't interesting enough, so I watch him. He is breathing hard, his broad chest puffing up and down. I notice a thick drop of sweat making its way down his strained throat, over the sharp bump of his Adam's apple. Maybe he's been running. Without looking down, the dark man reaches back to get something from his pocket. A cigarette. He shifts, brings his face down, and I see his features. They are a system of angles and sharp defined lines. His high cheekbones slant into a strong, stubble jaw. Sweat dots his forehead and he wipes it off with his arm, stretching the fabric of his hoodie over his heaving chest. Any moment, I expect him to light the cigarette and take in a drag. I realize I'm dying to watch him smoke, to see the tendrils of smoky warmth slip away into the winter air. But he doesn't. He simply stares at it, wedged between two of his fingers. The cigarette remains still, an object of his perusal. He frowns at it, like he's fascinated, like he hates it, like he can't imagine why a blunt stick of cancer is holding his attention. Then he throws it away. He reaches back again and gets out another cigarette. The same routine follows. Staring, frowning, my anticipation of seeing what he does next. This time, he sighs, his chest shuddering up and down as he produces a lighter from his pocket. He throws the stick in his mouth and lights it up with a flick of his finger. He takes a drag and then lets the smoke seep out. His eyes fall shut at the ecstasy of that first pull. He might have even groaned. I would have. Watching him fight his impulse to smoke was exhausting. I feel both sad and happy that he gave in. I wonder what I would have done in the same situation. Kara's face comes to mind, her saying I need to work on restraining myself. I know the smoke coming out of his mouth is virgin, not a drop of marijuana in there. But I want it in my mouth, too. I so want it. Abruptly, he stops and shoots up from his seat, pocketing the lighter. This guy is tall, maybe 6'3" or something. I have to crane my neck to look at him even though I'm standing far away. He skips on his feet, takes one last drag, flicks a cigarette on the ground, crushes it, pulls the hoodie over, and takes off jogging. I come unglued from the tree, run to the bench, and look in the direction where he vanished. Nothing but darkness and frosty air. I might as well have conjured him up, like a child makes up an imaginary friend to feel less lonely. Sighing, I sit where he sat. The place is cold as ever, as if he never sat there. My exhaustion is taking its toll and I close my eyes. I breathe in the lingering smell of cigarette, and maybe even something chocolatey. I curl up on the bench, my cheek pressing into the cold wood. I hate winter, but I can't fall asleep in my warm bed. It's one of those ironies people laugh about. Drifting into sleep, I pray that the color of the stranger's eyes isn't green. Chapter 2. I live in a tower. It's the tallest building around the area of Pembroke University, where I've been banished to go to school. I'm on the top floor in a two-bedroom apartment, overlooking the university park. In fact, I can see the entire campus from my balcony. The umbrella of trees, red rooftops of squatting houses, spiked buildings. I like to sit up on my balcony and throw water balloons at people down on the street. When they look up, outraged, I duck behind the stone railing. But in those 5 seconds, I feel acknowledged. They knew someone was up there, throwing things at them. I like that. The lower floors will be rented out in a few months, but I'm currently the only person living in this posh, luxurious, tower-like building. Henry Cox, my current stepdad, is the owner, hence the early access. My mom thought living in a dorm would make me more susceptible to drugs and alcohol, as if I can't score here if I want to. Since my heart is lonely today, I decide to go to the bookstore and get the books on my course list. Might as well, since classes begin tomorrow. I throw on some sweatpants and a large hoodie, then cover myself up with my favorite purple fur coat, a scarf, and a hat. My dark hair falls around my face for extra protection from the cold. 10 minutes later, I'm at the campus bookstore, pulling up the list of books on my phone. One by one, I collect the required texts in the nook of my arm. I'm sad that it only took a few minutes, and now I'll have to go back to my tower. Then I get an idea. I walk toward the literature section of the store. Rows and rows of books with beautiful calligraphy surround me in shoulder-height wooden bookshelves. There's a smell here that I can get used to. Warm and sharp. Heaven must smell like this. Unlike Caleb, I'm not much of a reader. He's a great lover of books and art. With Lana crooning in my ears about dark paradise, I run my fingers over the edges of the books, trying to decide how best to mess things up. My lonely heart perks up. It flips in my chest, telling me how much it appreciates my efforts to fill this giant gaping hole. Don't mention it. Then I get to work. I trade books on the G shelf with the ones on the F. I laugh to myself, cackling as I imagine people getting confused. It calls for a little twerking, so I move my ass, only a little, mind you, to the sensual beats of the song. As I turn around, my movements halt. The book in my hand remains suspended in the air, and all thoughts vanish from my head. He is here. Him. A dark smoker from last night. He stands tall and intimidating with a book of his own in his hands. Like last night, he is frowning at the object. Maybe it pissed him off somehow, offended him with its existence. If not for the ferocity of his displeasure, I never would have recognized him under the industrial light of the bookstore. He looks different in the light. More real, more angry, more dangerous. His dark hair gleams, the strands made of wet black silk. The night muted their beauty, their fluidity. I was right about his face, though. It's a web of square plains and valleys, sharp and harsh, but regal and proud. Nothing is soft about him except his lips, which are currently pursed. I picture the cigarette sitting in his full, plump mouth. Then, like last night, he sighs, and the violence in his frown melts a little. He hates the book, but he wants it. I think he hates how much he wants it. But why? If he wants it so much, he should just take it. My heart has forgotten its loneliness and is invested in this dark stranger now. I study him from top to bottom. A leather jacket hangs from his forearm. He's wearing a crisp white shirt and blue jeans and... Oh my God. He's wearing a white shirt and blue jeans. He's dressed like my favorite song, Blue Jeans by Lana Del Rey. My heart starts to beat faster, faster, faster. I need him to look up. I need to see his eyes. I will him to do just that, but he doesn't get my vibes. I'm just about to go up to him when a girl skips into my vision. He looks up then. In fact, he whips his eyes up, irritated. They are blue, a brilliant blue, a fiery blue, like the hottest part of a flame, or like the water that puts out that flame. Hi, the girl says as her blonde ponytail swishes across her back. He doesn't reply, but watches her through his dark, thick lashes. I was wondering if you could help me get a few books from over there. She points to the tall wooden shelf across the room that almost touches the roof. A couple of girls are standing by it. They giggle among themselves when he looks over. Really? That's so cliche, hitting on a guy like that at a bookstore? Well, who am I to judge? I've done things like that multiple times with Caleb. Playing the damsel in distress just so he'll come save me. The girl is waiting for him to say something. He's been holding his silence for the past few seconds, and I begin to feel embarrassed for her. Silence is the worst response when trying to get someone to notice you. Then he breaks his tight pose and shrugs.
I'd love to help you, but I forgot my ladder at home today.
Low and guttural, his voice. It's a growl, really, and it makes me shiver. He delivers the line with such dryness that even I'm confused. Don't they have a ladder here at the store? But then the complete yet fake innocence on his face tells me he's making a joke. And despite the shivery skin, I chuckle quietly.
They have a ladder here. Look,
the girl says, pointing to the dark brown wooden ladder slanting against the bookcase. Her friends are still staring at the exchange between them.
I see,
he murmurs, scratching his jaw with his thumb and then drumming his fingers against his biceps. There are tight lines around his eyes, flashing in and out of existence. He's trying to control himself yet again. He hated the interruption, and now he's deciding how to deal with it. It's all guesswork on my part, but I'm right. I just know it.
I'm totally scared to climb it in my heels,
the blondie explains.
You shouldn't be,
he encourages.
I do it all the time.
Do what all the time?
Climb ladders in my heels.
He deadpans and studies something on the floor. Her shoes, maybe?
I can see where you're having trouble. Pencil heels. You don't want to mess with those. Dangerous contraptions. People have lost their lives.
There's a moment of silence, then.
You're kidding, right?
No, I never kid about heels.
He rubs his lips together.
Or skirts that make my calves look slimmer. I never kid about them either.
What?
The girl screeches. He draws back, looking affronted.
You don't think my calves can look slim in a skirt? Are you calling me fat?
What? I'm not... I never...
Yes, so I just had a tub of chocolate ice cream, and yes, I promised myself I'd cut down on sugar.
A sharp, dramatic sigh.
But I slipped up. You think just because you're blonde and pretty you can question a man's wardrobe choices?
The blue in his eyes is amused, as are the crinkles around them. I press my lips together to stop the snort from bursting out.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I just came here asking for help.
The girl is irritated and indignant. The crinkles around his eyes snap back into tight lines.
Let me tell you a little secret.
He lowers his voice, and I find myself inching closer.
I'm not the helping kind.
He tilts his head to point toward her friends.
You should run along and play with people your own age and IQ level.
Then he throws the book on the shelf, looks at his watch, and strides away, leaving us both stunned. The blondie huffs and heads toward her friends. So the blue-eyed smoker is a giant asshole. I feel bad for the girl, even though a trapped laugh escapes me. If that was his show of control, I don't know what he'll do if unleashed. I walk to where he was standing and pick up the abandoned book. A Lover's Discourse, Fragments by Roland Barthes. It looks harmless enough with an unassuming black cover. I wonder why he was mad at this book. I wonder how our conversation would go if we ever talked. I wouldn't even know what to say to him except, "Hi, I'm Layla, and you remind me of a song." Hours later, I'm back at home. I'm tired and want to go to sleep. I don't even want to watch porn, which I normally do while munching on my Twizzlers. I don't watch porn to get myself off. No, I don't even touch myself. I watch it to feel something. A sense of closeness to someone, maybe. I study the naked, writhing bodies, the erotic frown on the girl's face, the look of focus on the guy's. I listen to the sounds they make, albeit fake. I try to understand their dynamic. It looks surreal to me. I try to compare it with the one time I had sex. It was nothing like that. The guy didn't even look at me like he'd die if he didn't get inside me. And the girl, me, wanted him to get out as soon as he got in. Well, that's what you get when you force someone to sleep with you. First day of the spring semester. I wonder why they call it the spring semester. It's still January and freakishly cold. The snow is sprawled around like a white nightmare, and the wind blows it sideways, slapping our faces with chilled flurries. Even so, there's an enthusiasm in the air. New classes, new professors, new love stories. The street outside my tower is flooded with people carrying book bags and wearing puffed-up multicolored jackets. I'm bombarded with shrieks of laughter and conversations as I walk down the street to Creme and Beans, my favorite coffee shop. It seems as if it's become everyone's favorite overnight because it's jam-packed this morning. I wait in a long line that stretches to the back of the store. The line moves slowly, like molasses. And as I take a step forward, I see him. Again. The blue-eyed smoker. He is up ahead at the counter. I can only see his profile, square jaw and untamed hair, as he steps out of the line, fishes his wallet out, and pays for the coffee. He walks out, clenching a cigarette between his teeth and lights it up. No hesitation this time. Has he already lost the battle? My legs move of their own volition, and I abandon the line, running after him. Even the blast of the cold wind isn't enough to deter me from pursuing the dark stranger. He is eating up the distance, leaving a trail of smoke behind. He is more lunging than walking with his long legs, and I have to speed walk to keep up. He walks toward McKinley Street where the quad is located, dodging the stream of people easily. I'm not as graceful. I bump and crash into bodies. But somehow I keep the broad line of his shoulders in sight. It's hard not to, really. He's taller than most people, his back broader. And I bet when that black sport jacket is peeled off, that back is an expanse of thick cuts and sleek lines, much like his face. The chilled breeze ruffles his hair and scatters the smoke billowing out of his cigarette. I can taste it in my mouth. Taste the ashy smoke and languid relief that only nicotine can provide. This man makes me want to buy a pack of cigarettes and smoke my day away. He makes me want to whip out my fake ID and get liquored up. That reminds me, I am a good girl now. So what the fuck am I doing? I've got class and I should be scrambling like everyone to get to it. "But we want to follow him," my heart whines. Fine, just this once. I keep following my smoker. We cross the quad and he climbs the steps leading up to the bridge that stretches over the two sides of campus. I hardly ever take it since all my classes are on the south side where I live. But we're going to the north side, I guess. The other side of campus is quieter. Cobblestone pathways and benches are almost empty. There are hardly any stragglers here. Even the air is sharper as it blows through my loose hair and swishes around my red checkered skirt. Here the leafless trees are dense as they line the path, making it seem like we're walking through woods. At last he stops in front of a building, and I stop a few feet behind him. The golden letters on the red-bricked high-rise building say MacArthur Building. And on the side, in the smaller cursive font, it says, The Labyrinth, whatever that means. I enter the building behind him, and sounds bombard me from every side. Murmurs, laughter, footsteps, a phone rings somewhere, a drawer is snapped shut, a door thuds closed. It's a hub of activity in contrast to the quietness outside, as though every soul on this side of campus resides within this archaic building. The floors gleam under my feet, and the unpolished brick walls give the space a homey feel. I want to look around and see what exactly this space is, but I don't dare take my eyes off him. He walks down the hallway and enters the very last room. I follow him, and as I'm about to enter the room, it happens. He turns and looks at me. His mysterious, otherworldly blue eyes are on me, and I'm rendered paralytic. I can't move. I can't think. His stare lulls me into a foggy stillness. He leans against something, a table. The windows and the wall behind him let the sunlight in, which dissolves as soon as it touches his body, making him glow. He takes a sip of his coffee and watches me over the rim of the mug. Somewhere along the way, he got rid of his cigarette, and oddly, I mourn the loss. Hi, I say breathily.
Are you going to take a seat?
His rich, mature voice slides over my skin, causing a slight sting, like that of an aged liquor.
What?
I ask stupidly, thoughtlessly.
Take a seat?
He says again, sighing. I don't... He stands up straight.
Take a seat.
He enunciates every word like I'm an imbecile.
Or get the fuck out of my class.
Class. That word pierces the bubble around me, making me wince. I break his gaze and look around. Sure enough, we're in a class with 20 or so people, and they're all staring at me. I look back at him frowning and study his features. The aged, mature features. The lines around his mouth and eyes, his confident manner. The fact that he is intimidating when he wants to be. He doesn't look like a college-going guy, because he's not. This blue-eyed smoker is a professor. Chapter 3. You're a professor. I repeat my thoughts out loud. I don't know what else to say. A tight, barely tolerant smile.
What gave me away?
Plenty of things, actually. I open my mouth to answer his question, but my heart whispers, He's kidding, you idiot. Sarcasm alert. Right. I close my mouth but open it again. I didn't realize that when I followed you here.
You followed me.
He's studying me with shrewd eyes. I wonder what I look like to him. Not like that blondie, I hope. Not like anyone else either. No, I answer immediately, without a thought. Did you steal Caleb's underwear? No, Mom. Of course not. I mean, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't realize this is a class.
It is, as you can see.
He puts down his coffee mug, ready to dismiss me.
So either take a seat or get out.
Right, I nod. I'm on the verge of leaving. Putting this whole thing behind me. But my legs move forward instead of backward, and then I'm walking through the rows of red plastic chairs. An uncomfortable prickle needles the back of my neck, and I know he is watching me. I take a seat in the back, look up at him, the professor, and find him unzipping his coat. He takes it off, revealing a starched gray shirt over black jeans. As he drapes the jacket over the chair, his movements are deft and fluid, like a melody. I was right. He's like a song. The realization brings heat, and I feel hotter than I've ever felt in winter. My skin sizzles and my breath skips. It's so odd. Drops of sweat bead and trickle down my spine.
With trembling hands, I take my white beanie off and shake out my messy hair. Next to go are my fuzzy scarf, my gloves, the purple fur coat, and at last, the black cardigan, leaving me in a full-sleeved white top and red checkered skirt. I pile everything in the next chair and take a deep breath. As I look up, my eyes clash with the tiny blue balls of fire. The professor stares at me with a raised eyebrow and hands in his pockets. By the looks of it, he, along with everyone else, has been staring at me for a while now. Colt hates me, I mumble and shrug, jerking my shoulders up. He shakes his head once and runs his gaze over the class. The students sit on the edges of their seats as they wait for him to speak. I lean forward too. What class is this?
Well,
he rocks on his heels. We know who you are, a girl says from the front row, and the entire class breaks into excited murmurs. Yeah, but I don't. What's his name?
Okay, then.
He seems to be a little taken aback by their enthusiasm. I loved your latest collection, she chirps. We all did. We even had an anesthesia night after finals. We read the entire thing. I got the title piece. It's hands down the best poem in the book.
Wait, what? He's a poet?
The guy next to her interrupts her.
I beg to differ. I think I like The Nighttime the best. It's got a certain mystery to it. It starts in one place and then boom, the ending completely blows your mind.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think it's deceiving the reader. I hate deceiving the reader. I think it's just cheap tactics, you know? That's why Anesthesia is the best one. It's simple and pedestrian and just so powerful.
Yeah, it is simple. But Nighttime has flair to it. It's dramatic. Sometimes drama is important. Big gestures, you know? That kind of thing.
They argue some more. Words like syllables, stressed syllables, flow, form, rhythm, things I've never even heard of, are thrown around. Meanwhile, the professor watches them with a certain shock. It's comical, really. Finally, the girl gets tired of it and addresses him. What do you think, professor? He shakes his head as if waking up from sleep.
Think about what? Drama or simplicity? What do you think is better?
This comes from the guy. The professor folds his arms across his chest and squints his eyes, as if he's thinking about the answer. If yesterday's incident is any indication, he's pretending to indulge them.
That's a tough one. I might need something a little stronger than coffee to come up with an answer. And unfortunately, it's frowned upon to drink in a class. So, why don't we begin with something a little ordinary? Like, names, perhaps?
He lifts his chin to the front row girl.
Do you want to start us off?
Okay. The girl wasn't expecting that. So, I'm Emma. Emma Walker. Just like that, the spotlight falls away from him as people start introducing themselves. He adjusts the cuffs of his shirt, fiddles with the buttons with his thick, long fingers. I feel especially drawn to them. He is a writer. He writes with those hands. They are little gods, aren't they? They create things. Words. Poems. For someone like me, that's extraordinary. I've got zero knowledge of poetry, but he makes me want to crack open his book and read.
Huh.
No one has ever made me want to do something as innocent as reading, while simultaneously making me want to get high and drunk. Who is this man? He's like candy-coated toxin. I'm so caught up in my musings that I almost miss the golden glint of a ring on his hand. For a split second, I'm confused as to what it is.
Then I realize it's a wedding band.
The blue-eyed professor is married. My heart slows down for a few beats, making me dizzy. And then it picks back up. Thundering, galloping. It's anxious. I almost want to rub my palm in circles where it's making a fuss inside my chest. It's bizarre. What do I care if he's married? Biting my lip, I look up and find his gaze on me. It's one of those things where you accidentally meet someone's eyes. It's not deliberate. It's not like he was watching me watch his hands. and yet my skin crackles with the tiny bit of electricity that is left behind after a gaze touches the body. I shift in my chair, crossing and uncrossing my legs. Before long, it's my turn to talk. I'm Layla, Layla Robinson. His focus stays on me a beat longer than it did on the other students.
Why do you want to take Introduction to Poetry, Miss Robinson?
Great. The first thing he asks me is the one thing I have no clue about. Maybe I can say my therapist slash guidance counselor suggested I try something new and here I am. But I don't want him to know I'm crazy. We are not crazy. My unhelpful heart chimes in. I sit up straight and clear my throat. Well, because it's interesting. I like poetry.
What do you like about it?
My breaths bubble up from my chest, but don't reach my mouth. I can't exhale a proper puff of air as I contemplate his question. I'm under scrutiny and I hate it. I feel everyone judging me, picking me apart. It feels like home, and I want to disappear. But, like always, I keep my chin up and my eyes unblinking. The question churns inside my brain, and I have an epiphany. The words, I exclaim.
Yes?
He raises a sarcastic brow. Asshole. It's like lyrics without music. I forge on. It's so easy to lose yourself in the beat of music, but the lyrics keep you grounded. It keeps your mind active, you know? You have to pay attention, listen to it over and over to get its meaning, to read between the lines. I nod, agreeing with my own analysis. Yeah, that's why I like poetry, because of the words. They ground me. The silence is absolute. No one even breathes. Or maybe it's just me who doesn't. I've never thought about lyrics in that way, but maybe it's true. Words, lyrics, poetry, aren't they all the same? The professor has the same look on his face as he did while he watched the cigarette in the book. His control is tick-tocking, and I'm afraid. I'm thrilled, which is a very strange reaction to have. Then he turns his gaze away.
Let's discuss the syllabus, shall we?
A relieved breath whooshes out of me. This man has some serious self-control, if you don't count the cigarettes. I should take lessons from him. I should register for this class. At least Kara will be happy. He moves around the desk and fishes out a stack of papers from the drawer. It's copies of the syllabus. He keeps one and hands the rest to Emma in the first row. For the next few minutes, the room is filled with rustling of papers and scratches of pen. The sheet reaches me and I see it. His name. On the top right corner of the page with his office number and hours, and his extension. Thomas Abrams. Thomas. Professor Abrams. I bend down and retrieve a pen from my bag and underline his name. Once, twice, three times in purple glitter ink. Then I draw a circle around it. I tell my hands to stop, but they don't. They dig the nib of the pen in, even more furiously at my protests. Once we all have a copy, Professor Abrams proceeds to read out the important parts. The class is part workshop, part lit, meaning we will have to write our own poems and have them critiqued, along with reading poems by some famous people. Honestly, I don't know the names of half of them. Donne, Plath, Byron, Poe, Wilmot. Professor Abrams' voice has very little inflection to it, making me think he doesn't have much interest in the syllabus. He frowns at certain places especially, like when the syllabus outlines the homework to be given in the grading system. There are a few moments when Emma tries to engage him in a conversation, but he evades smoothly. I can feel her frustration from where I sit in the last row. Either Thomas Abrams doesn't care, or he has no idea how to be a teacher. I'm guessing it's a little of both. Before long, the class is over, and we have our first assignment. Write a 1 to 2 page essay on our reasons for choosing this class and the authors that inspire us. The assignment is enough to send me dashing and never return to this side of campus. As I'm exiting, I pause at the threshold and look back. Professor is fiddling with the cuffs of his shirt again, and the sun rays reflect off his golden wedding band. Rolling his shoulders, he pulls the jacket on and shakes his arms out. Still graceful. Still fluid like a song. Still potent enough to make me shiver. Before he can catch me staring, I walk away and almost collide with someone out in the hallway. It's the guy from the front row. I forget his name. He's got messy hair and black-rimmed glasses. He is cute in a nerdy sort of way, with the hood of his jacket crooked across his neck.
Hey.
He greets me like he knows me. Hey. I cock my head to the side, trying to remember if I know him.
You're Layla. Layla Robinson.
I am? Did I do something to him?
I'm Dylan Anderson. We had history together.
We did?
Uh-huh. Professor Allen? He used to pick at his nose while writing on the board.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. How did I forget that? I shudder. Ugh. That was the worst. Dylan laughs. It's a goofy, awkward kind of laugh, and I love it. He turns to the girl who sat beside him.
This is Emma Walker.
Hey. I raise my hand and wave at her. It's nice to meet you. Her greeting is wary, and I don't understand why that would be.
You were in history too? I ask her.
No, I passed on that after Dylan told me about the professor.
Yeah, you coward.
He elbows her playfully and coaxes a reluctant smile out of her.
She's a big chicken when it comes to taking risks. We decided to do the class together, but then she abandoned me.
You're such a drama queen. She pretends to be annoyed, but I can see she's not. She's loving this, basking in his attention. They argue some more and it becomes clear. I am quite an expert at sniffing out heartbreak and one-sided love after years of practice. Emma is in love with Dylan, but he doesn't know it. And that wary glance? She was jealous of me. Me, the discarded girl. I want to tell her she has nothing to be afraid of. I'm not a threat. Maybe to myself, but not to other people. I study them together. Dylan, messy dark hair and hazel eyes, with a boyish, somewhat shy charm about him. And Emma, brown hair and eyes, sparkling with intelligence and maturity. They're a perfect match. I think anybody who's in love with anyone is a perfect match. I don't believe in crap like, there's somebody better for you out there. I don't want better. I want the guy I'm in love with. There goes my selfish heart. It's thundering in my chest with anger and frustration. Why doesn't Caleb love us? The clicking footsteps have us turning toward the classroom. Thomas emerges, tall and unapproachable, hardly sparing us a glance. As he passes our little group, I feel the buzz of his energy waking up my body in goosebumps. He strides down the hallway to the stairs at the end and takes them two at a time. Dylan exhales a sharp breath.
That guy is not what I expected.
Is it me or is he totally boring? He's nothing like what I was hoping. Emma frowns, folding her arms. I thought he'd be friendlier or something, and would at least answer my questions. I was so excited to actually learn something from him, you know? Dylan rubs the top of her head playfully, and Emma swats his hand away.
Told you. You were expecting too much, Emmy. He's just a guy who writes poetry.
Just a guy? Emma is enraged. You have no idea how amazing he is. He's one of the best poets we have right now. Do you know how many awards he's won? He's magic. Dylan turns to me.
He's really not. She's got a little crush on him, that's all.
I do not. Dylan's eyes hold a twinkle at seeing Emma so riled up, and I chuckle. Guys can be so clueless. He likes her, too. He just doesn't know it yet. They begin arguing again, and I feel like this is how they are with each other. This is their sacred ritual, and I'm the intruder. I'm about to excuse myself when a series of footsteps thump on the second floor and we all look up. What is that?
I ask, wincing. The theater people. They have a conference room upstairs they use to practice when the auditorium isn't free.
Dylan informs me. Wow, I'm impressed. You guys have